Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the January 29th special meeting for advisory board interviews, and we have two business items on tonight. Let the record know that there is a quorum and all members are present, and call the meeting to order, and we'll lead off with a moment of silence. Thank you. And Mr. Brannon, would you lead us in the pledge tonight?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Brannon. Since this isn't a regular meeting, there's really no formal announcements or anything, but I did want to say thank you to everybody that's coming out tonight. Thank the all the board members that have been serving and then reapplying. We value and value your work. And so with that, I have the order. I was going to just kind of lay it out there. I'm going to lay out the order of the interviews. And with that, I'll just start with that first. The first one we have would be the T-bid. And then following that, we're going to have the Planning Commission, and then PWAB, the Citizens Oversight Committee, Rec and Parks, and Harbor. And we have one question for our city attorney, and that would be on the PWAB. We have quite a few applicants, and we were going to entertain whether or not we could go for seven tonight. And if we were to do that, we would understand that there would be we would have to come back, as I think, to modify our bylaws.
Correct. You definitely would have to modify your bylaws, but you'd have to modify your bylaws before accepting any of the interviews, because basically then what you'd be doing if you were to accept those on, knowing that you'd come back in the bylaws, you'd be shutting down any public comment or public dialogue or deliberation regarding whether those bylaws should be accepted. So if you do want to go to seven, it'd have to be agendized, but you could let the other applicants know and follow that up at the exact same time if you were to go to seven with the appointment of them.
Okay.
So, but it would have to be, you couldn't make that appointment tonight, in other words.
Sure. But we could go through the process of going for seven and just notify them later.
At any time, council can increase or decrease over the years.
One that wasn't selected for a board tonight to stick around and wait for the Harbor Board interviews and then step up, and we'd go through the process, and that would allow us to fill three seats for that.
And can I make a comment about that?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry to catch you off guard about this. I had some time today because I was looking at the orientation of the Harbor Advisory Board and recognizing that we're losing Mr. Cunningham, who was the fishing at large seat. And
yeah.
I did have a chance to talk to the Harbor Director today. My wife let me get off of work a little bit today. So his comment was, and I tend to agree with him, that it is important, of course, for the Harbor Advisory Board to have a fishing at large member. We don't have anyone applying in that capacity tonight, but his thought was that he and the board members could go out and try to recruit for that position. So I'd suggest that we actually hold that position open to make sure that we have a fishing representation.
Okay.
On that.
How does everyone else feel about that? Okay, good. All right. Good. That settles that then.
And
thanks for that suggestion and that outreach. That was good.
Oh, thanks. Thank my wife. If you could we figure out a way with the Harbor Advisory Board to bring them forward earlier, since there's two seats open and they're returning seats, applicants for those seats?
How about then, since we're going to do that, why don't we just do T-bid and the Harbor? So T-bid first and the Harbor second, and then we can go through the rest of the order.
That'd be great.
That's very good.
Okay. Yes.
Following up on the idea of expanding the Public Works Advisory Board, do we need to make a future agenda item declaration right now for that?
I don't. I'll let the attorney answer that. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
We certainly will talk with the mayor about it. The mayor is able to put that on his own, so we'll see if that's what you want to do. If not, then we'd have to wait for the next agenda for someone to do it.
Great. Thanks. Okay, so I think we've got all the all that ready to go. Now, as far as question and answers goes, I did some looking at time-wise. Basically, if each of us had one question for each applicant would be able to answer one of our questions. And then following all of that, if any one of us had one specific question for an applicant, then we could do it at that time. But basically, we could just go from one side to the next. We would ask our question, and then the entire applicant board would respond to that one answer. And then from there at the end, then we'd follow up with any kind of questions. So far, so good. And then as soon as we invite our TBID board up, we'll go through introductions for all the applicants. And then once we get into the question answer, all of you guys go through introduction. And, you know, if you can try to keep your answers to a minute, you're not timed to that, but, you know, feel free. But we're going to try to get through all this. So with that, are there any other questions?
Why are we even bringing them up here? They're automatic here for TBID and Harbor.
I think for the public part, we need to bring them up.
Sure.
Okay. So with that, if the TBID applicants would come up, please. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for reapplying. And since there are two seats, thank you for coming back and reapplying. And we just ask that you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your experience so far on the TBID and for the audience as well. Please. Thanks.
Karen Biagini, and I've been on the TBID since its inception. It's been a long road up to this point. I think we're very encouraged now with the new direction we're taking in terms of the new director of tourism and the future for marketing in Morro Bay.
Michelle Hawkes, I've also been on the TBID since the beginning. It's been 3 years, I guess. That's why we're here. It's a three-year. I would probably say the same as Karen. I think I'm just really excited where we've been. As some of the council knows and the public knows, it's been a hard step where we've gotten, but I feel like we've got there, and I just hope to see us continue to move forward and get, you know, Morro Bay as the destination it truly needs to be.
Well, thank you for your support. And Mark, are there any questions, or we just want to unanimously approve this?
I move we unanimously approve both of these people.
If there aren't any other questions, I would approve that as well.
And I've served the past 8 years on the Harbor Advisory Board, probably the last 6 years as its chairperson. And we've, over that period of time, with the actions of the City Council, of course, have had a few accomplishments that I like and the other members of the board liked. So I'm hopeful to see more accomplishments in the next 4 years.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. My name is Bill LaFay. I've been a resident of Morro Bay for 15 years, the county for 45. Been a member of the Harbor Board for 4 years. I've enjoyed the experience. We've accomplished some, as Jim said, some tasks. We have a lot more to accomplish, and that's why I'd like to continue for the next 4 years to be on the Harbor Board.
Well, thank you guys for your work, and I think we probably have a unanimous support.
I'd just like to ask one really quick question.
Great.
I know since there are different categories on the Harbor Board, could you each tell us what category you are in?
Categories, as far as I understand it, is a decision that the City Council makes. I started out as representing recreational boaters, and then by the second term, I've now been assigned to marine-related businesses. But the various areas having to do with the harbor itself is a joint effort, and marine-related businesses is who I just for the past 4 years represented.
Frankly, I'm really not really sure what category I'm under, but there's about seven of them because there's seven of us. And I do you know Eric? Member at large then, I guess.
Okay, thank you guys.
I move we appoint both of these gentlemen to the Harbor Advisory Board.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Andersby, thanks for coming tonight. Okay, our next interview would be for the Planning Commission. Well, thanks you guys for coming out tonight and applying, and our two reoccurring members for reapplying as well. And I'll start with introduction with Mr. Nagy, and if you can continue down. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Nagy, as you know, I've been serving on the Planning Commission for the last 2 years. I've enjoyed it a lot and learned a lot. There's still some work to be done that I'd like to be a part of because I enjoy participating in our local government. And more for one thing, the sign ordinance that we've been working on has not been able to get through. So I'd like to continue doing that and continue serving. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Schneider. I've been a Morro Bay resident for 5 years and own my own business for 14. I have a lot of experience in consensus building in my professional career and also in some of the quasi-regulatory things like homeowners associations and other kinds of regulatory settings. So I have a lot of experience with consensus building, and I think as we go forward for the looking at what's going on with the power plant, the sewer plant, various proposals for convention centers here, I think I can use that that experience to hopefully build some consensus in the city and get a seat at the table and contribute in that manner.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Lucas. I've been a Morro Bay resident for 12 years. I served on the North Embarcadero Futures Task Force about 5 years ago. I was on the Planning Commission from 2009 through 2010, 8 through 2010. And I teach architecture at Cal Poly. And so I have some expertise in complex projects as well as residential construction and development.
Thank you.
I'm Jessica Napier, and I've served on the Planning Commission for almost 2 years now. I've lived in Morro Bay for 6 years.
Before I moved up here, I'm a member of the Chamber, a member of the Eagle Rotaries, and I've been president of Fountain Valley Booster Clubs for three times, president of Exchange Clubs for a couple years. So I know how the systems works, and I'm looking forward to helping the city, giving whatever I can as far as my services, and just being a part of the program. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll bring it back for questions, and if I can, I'll start down to my left. Councilmember Johnson, Christine, if you want to start with your question.
Yes, thanks, Mayor. Thank you all for applying. I think it takes a lot of guts to come up here and sit at the table in front of the microphone and continuing on. Thanks to you, that those two of you who are returning and those who have returned from the past. My question is pretty basic. Why plan? So if you could tell us your philosophy on land use and planning.
We'll start in order with you, Mr. Nagy, and then back
okay,
around.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, planning is very important. We are planning. The people that have planned this town before us have done a pretty good job. So we want to keep going in that direction. Keep a vibrant community. You know, we use the same tools that we can, the general plan, the coastal local coastal plan, specific plans, and zoning codes and whatnot to as tools to keep a vibrant community going. And that's my answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think you have to plan because in order to preserve the overall character of Morro Bay, there are a lot of diverse interests. And there has to be a way to balance those things. I mean, everyone has their own interest. Everyone has their pluses and minuses of any direction you take in development. And I think the planning process is the way you bring that all together and make a community decision on how to balance all those different things.
I think planning has to do with time. For those of us that have chosen to live here, we've sunk our entire life savings in our homes. We expect the immediate time that we have to live here to be respected by neighbors and to grow our community in a positive way. I think we also have to respect the people who helped establish things like the fishing industry here and made this a vital place to have a business. But I think the biggest challenge we have now is we have a lot of intergenerational challenges that go beyond some of our own lifetimes, and we have to look forward to what is good for Morro Bay in the long term as well as the short term. So I think balancing those interests between respecting the past and cherishing what we have now and planning for future generations is critical.
Jessica?
So I would say that planning is vital to the operation of any city, including ours. And understanding the history, business, and citizens in our town all comes together with land use and planning. And actually, I have a little experience. Paul and I were working on the subdivision ordinance, and I know that the local coastal and general plan were interested in getting those updated. And I have a little experience with that now, and I would love to do that. Work on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that planning is really a way to realize the vision of the community. I think every citizen of Morro Bay has a vision of what they would like this town to be in the future, and the only way to bring that together, to form a consensus, and to make it happen is through the planning process. And so I think it's very important that our general plan, our local coastal plan, and our zoning ordinance reflect the current vision of the citizenry here. I think planning is also really important for consistency. I think these different documents should be the yardstick by which proposals and projects are measured, and should provide a consistent yardstick for everyone who comes before the city.
Yeah, the reason I applied is I'm very interested in, kind of like everybody else said, the future of Morro Bay. That's why I moved here, to retire and invest in, you know, real estate just like everybody else did, hopefully that might pass it down to my generations and my family, and they'll enjoy living here. And the only way to accomplish that is through the planning. And just like everybody mentioned, the general plan was designed in 1988 or something like that. And I think it was set up properly, and we should, as a planning commission member, enforce that, keep it going down the road to prosper and make the city grow within limits. I mean, not explode like did in Orange County. That's why I left there. But to grow at a nice, moderate pace, and to also, the Planning Commission should be available.
Let's start with Jessica and go back this way.
Okay. So I would say that Paul and I saw this when we were dealing with the subdivision ordinance. It seemed like, besides inconsistencies in how our code is written and compares to other codes we need to follow, that wasn't really the problem. The problem seemed to be communication between citizens and staff and, you know, just generally not understanding how the process works, citizens, and then not getting clear or timely answers from staff. So there's a little bit of a problem there. One of our suggestions was maybe for one of us planning commissioners or a couple of us to go through the process with someone and their plans, not one that would come before the commission, but just a regular project, and see what are the problems that people are facing. What is it, besides the generalized complaints that we're hearing, that we can really address and make things easier for people?
So. Thank you. Dr. Taft?
Yeah, George, there's a few things. Number one, I think that we need to have planning instruments which are very clear, that anybody can, you or I can sit down and read it and say, oh, this is what I need to do. Right now, there are some areas that are confusing, that really, that don't make sense, or that have been interpreted over the years in ways that don't seem to be what's written down there. The second thing I would like to see for people who are not construction professionals, who don't do this for a living, I'd like to see a policy where the first day that you walk in with a project, you're going to get a list of everything that has to be done from that day until your project is built, and every cost that's going to be associated with that, to the greatest extent possible. And for people who are building professionals, who know what they need to do, who've been through down this road before, I'd like to see us institute a one-stop policy like Santa Barbara has, which means you walk in that day and you don't leave until you've got your permit. So part of it has to do with the Planning Commission. Part of it has to do with, is really not part of our jurisdiction. It has to do with some things I would like to see happen in the planning department itself.
Good question. We just remodeled our home 2 years ago. We had that exact same problem. We did our permit. We called up, where's our permit at? Well, it's over here. No, it's over here. Oh, I have it. I mean, it was very confusing. It took us 3 months to get it through to even come before the Planning Commission. So I think we need to streamline that whole system in the staff and with the Planning Commission, make it one, just kind of like a set. We need to have a set when you come in, this, and it has to be in by this day. And as a person putting that in who's not really experienced with what's going on, that would make it more reasonable. Say, okay, by January 1st, we need to have this done. By January 10th, we need to have this in to get all of our permits, all of our ducks in a row, as a matter of fact. Instead of going in there just giving it to them and then now you need this. So we get that done. Oh, now you need this. I mean, running back and forth, just have it all laid out so we know exactly on what day, when we need each thing in, and proceed that way. And I think it will streamline the whole system. And then by the time it gets to the Planning Commission, everybody's all on the same track and we know exactly where we're going. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a great question because I think there's so many scales and types of projects that come here. The vast majority of construction projects don't come through here because they're handled within the permit process. So the things that trigger a project coming before planning are either some kind of exception to the rules that are being asked for, or there's some kind of special area where everything needs to be taken a look at. And I think part of it comes from my own sense of being an architect is working in a lot of historic districts in the East Coast, is if you do your homework with your neighbors before you even come to a process like this, a lot of times all we're doing is representing what the consensus of the citizens are. And I think a lot of times people will go to their neighbors and talk about the nature of their work, and they'll build consensus and get letters of support and things like that. There are other people who perhaps wouldn't go that route, and they'll try to bring it forward based on what they think are the merits of the project, but when they bring it into the hearing process, we hear from a variety of other points of view that perhaps they didn't consider. And because we're vested with being the responsible members of the community to decide these things, it may come out with a different outcome. So I think there's a variety of scales. The things on the waterfront I think for the most part they came forward, and my recollection is almost all of them went through without too many problems. But I think there are certain parts of town that are more sensitive than others, and I think part of the burden falls on the person whose project goes beyond the bounds of a typical permit process to understand that this is a community process, and they need to do some homework on their own before they come to us.
I think it should be a little easier for people to find out what the rules are. For example, it would be nice if the building codes were actually posted online, maybe linked to the city's website. And so it would be helpful to have something like that where you could go and look them up. I also think the idea of a checklist is a good idea for different kinds of projects, and I think that was alluded to before. But the idea that you would have for a residential project, there are certain things you have to do, and you'd have just basically a checklist that people would have that they have to go through in a process. I agree with the idea of the neighbors. I did attend a meeting where a gentleman had a residential subdivision that he was proposing. And
already gone through quite a few strides in doing that. Secondly, the idea of a pre-application meeting with an applicant could come in and meet with everybody that needs to, planning, building, you know, public works, whoever might be involved in this project, to have everybody together at the table and then say each one of those different city groups would then say, well, we need you to have this and this and this when you come back. And that way, when the project comes back, the applicant has everything he needs and the project stands on four legs and moves forward without too many other problems.
Thank you. I'll go down with mine.
I want to make a little remark here. Very good answers, all of you. And I'm glad that you realize that we do have problems.
Thanks, George. My question it'll be addressed to some of you that have been on the Planning Commission and some of you that haven't, but just kind of general for, you know, how you respond as a Planning Commissioner with projects that you would have to rule on. And it's basically, how would you convey your message to an applicant in the public on a decision you're about to make? And I'll start with Susan.
I'm not sure I understand the question. I mean, before you actually make the decision,
you're going to rule on a project for or against it, and you have to convey that message for your ruling. How would you do that?
As an individual commissioner?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, first, I don't know what kind of ex parte rules there might be, and so, of course, we'd have to be conscious of any kind of side communication you might have with someone. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that and don't know if that's an issue, but let's assume it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's a good idea to meet with people either before or after, but preferably before, and explain to them, particularly if you're going to vote against their project. I think that's really where the communication is most important. To convey to them the reason that you are going to vote against them, and if they wish to change their project, or, you know, you can even give them ideas about how they might do that. So if it's allowed, I think it's a good idea to do that, and only because it could preserve viability of a project that might otherwise die in public, assuming that's allowed. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
I agree. I think there are numerous times I met with people before meetings at their request, and I tried to bring out what I thought might be potential problems that they might have a chance to solve or come up with a different sense of how they might present the project when it came to the hearing. But I think in general, I always tried to make sure that my rationale was developed through the examination of both staff and the applicant, that if I was going to be ruling against them, I wanted them to know what my rationale was through that disclosure process and coming up with fact-finding as well as areas of interpretation. So I don't think anything that I would have ever ruled against would have been a surprise or necessarily for a surprise, because I think it should come from the building up of what that case is during the hearing process.
Mr. Swain?
Yes, I think first I would have to view the project site to make sure I know what I'm talking about. I would also probably bring up suggestions. If I really felt that it's a project that's not going to pass, maybe bring up some positive suggestions on what they could do to maybe change a few things to take it home, do the homework, change it, bring it back, and then it'll be a passable project. But I don't think I could point blankly just tell them, you know, it's a done deal, go away. I would positively try to put a positive outlook on it and tell them, you know, what can they do to make this thing a viable project to make it pass. I think that'd be the best way to present that.
Thank you. I think it's important, particularly if you're not approving a project, to make it clear that this is not an issue of whether I like it or don't like it or whether it's pretty or not pretty or whether you did a good job. It really is a question of is it consistent with the general plan and the zoning ordinance? I think as a planning commissioner, it's our job to be knowledgeable in those areas and to be able to point out to people not only where they might have gone astray of the codes, but also what the codes would allow as alternatives. So I think it's good to not only point out why I couldn't support the project legally, but also to point out what would make it supportable. One thing that we've done a lot at the Airport Land Use Commission, and might be an idea for the Planning Commission as well,
and let it come out in discussion and hear what other people have to say through their research. So,
Paul.
I do agree with Jessica in that the discussion during our meeting comes out and you give your reasons at that point how you feel or why you feel the way you do about whatever given project there is. So you just make your ruling and try to be as kind as you can or congratulatory, whatever case may be. It could be that you're passing it or not, but they'll know the reasons why through your conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for all your answers. Nancy.
Okay, we've heard you talk about speaking to your neighbors, which is always a good idea. So aside from speaking to your neighborhood, how do you feel about property rights versus other community input?
Well, I guess I'll jump on that.
Thanks. Yeah, sorry, I was just writing that down. Thanks for doing that, Paul.
You know, all the community input is important, and but so are property rights. So, you know, I would feel that there are certain things that we can protect for the community and certain things that we cannot. So, for example, views, which is one that comes up quite often on the Planning Commission. And the fact is that the Planning Commission doesn't have the power to protect views from someone who's going to build in front of them. So in that case, you know, I do have to swing with property rights, that if you can fit within the setbacks and within the height limits and that it fits within our ordinance and general plan, then the property owner has the right to do what he wants to do.
Well, I think that also that a property owner is entitled to do whatever they are legally entitled to do. But I think that a project can be improved through taking into account the views of the neighbors and sometimes something will come up or can be crafted at the end that will meet everyone's needs. So I think in the end you have to say, are they entitled to do this? Are they not entitled to do this? And the rest of that is either optional or within the judgment of the commission. But generally, if they're entitled legally to do it, then I don't see any real way that a project can be denied on another basis.
I'm a big supporter of property rights, not only of the person building, but of the neighbors that are built near. And I think one of the big issues about a planning commission is there are zones that one enters into or wishes to extend one's rights that the neighbors do have an opportunity to speak as to whether or not these are rights that should be extended. And so I think when you get past the basic building code envelope issues and come before the commission, then the burden is on you to prove not only your own benefit, but what the benefit is to the community by what you're asking for. And so I think it takes on an extra burden. And I do think there are numerous ways that one can achieve what one wishes to do at the Planning Commission kind of hearing by taking into account very specific things about one's project that takes into account aspects that can contribute to the neighborhood as well as to one's own property. But that said, this is an area where people are asking for benefits, and not all benefits that benefit one person are going to be seen as benefiting the community.
Mr. Swain?
Yeah, that's a tough one. People should have a right to develop their land, but also, as kind of mentioned before, I think they should take into consideration or at least go around and talk to the neighbors and have a good feeling. I mean, nothing's worse than moving in a neighborhood and building a mansion and having everybody hate you. You need to get along with your neighbors, and you need to build something that kind of fits the neighborhood. I hate to keep bringing up, I came from Orange County, and they had what's called mansionizing of the areas. The setbacks were 5 feet, so they built 5, 5, 5 in a big mansion, two-story mansion. So I don't know if it's exactly what the codes is, but they should have a certain allowable, not only setbacks, but maybe a percentage has to be open land, so you have a little grass or something. And I think that will all fall into the general plan, the land use plan of how we tell people, yes, you have property rights, but there is some limits. I mean, you can't, you know, grow 40-foot trees and a mansion house and all this type. You have to be considerate of, is it aesthetically property with the rest of the neighborhood? And if so, then, you know, the people are going to have to kind of live with it. I'm sorry to say. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think that property rights are some sort of vague concept. I mean, it's not like patriotism or mom. Property rights are defined, followed through correctly.
And I would have to say that I totally agree with the last answer. We, as commissioners, need to go by what the code says, and our code generally favors property rights. We did have something come before us recently that actually fit within our local code, though, and we said no to it because it was just, it didn't conform to the neighborhood. It wasn't going to be a good fit. So in some instances, even though the owner followed all the rules, we found that one project didn't fit. This was in the Beach Tract, if any of you are familiar with that property. But anyhow, at meetings, though, I've been impressed by parties actually working together. Most of the public pays attention to the contentious projects and doesn't see, you know, that the majority of projects, when both parties are here, the people, the applicant, and then neighbors that maybe oppose the project, they come together and usually actually end up working things out, which has been great to see that.
Thank you. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. This is not easy. Excellent applications here. I'd like to know what your thoughts are of the Coastal Commission and how the commission itself affects Morro Bay and the challenges with that.
We'll start with Dr. Teft this time.
Well, I'm very supportive of the Coastal Commission, and I really would like to see a more cordial, constructive working relationship between the city and the Coastal Commission. I do recognize that perhaps at times the Coastal Commission goes overboard. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But overall, in the big picture, I think that the coast of California is a much better place for the efforts of the Coastal Commission.
Mr. Swain?
Yes, I think I also agree that, you know, the old saying, you get a lot more done with milk and honey than you can with sour milk or whatever it is. So to get along with the Coastal Commission and become friends with them, even if they sometimes do tend to be a little power struggle, and by at least showing that we respect them and treat them with respect. I think they're going to work well with you on projects you want to get done, as long as you kind of don't go in there and butt heads with them, but work with them. And that's where we need to go, I think, is just don't challenge them on every move, but go ahead and, you know, you can debate a little bit, find out exactly what's wrong, what's right, and then go from there. But at least be cordial with them and let them know that you respect what they're trying to get accomplished and follow the rules as much as you can. Thank you.
Mr. Lucas?
I think the Coastal Commission has a curious obligation, because on one hand, you know, we were just talking about the community puts together their own planning based on their own set of community values. And now we have something that crosses the entire length of the state that has to accommodate another set of values that the citizens of the state have put in place. And so there's potentially conflict between two different sets of values. It's not an engineering problem. It's a planning values problem. And so I think we always have to be cautious when we're looking at especially the larger scale implications of some of the work that we do, how that works with the larger planning principles that we inevitably are going to come up against at a group like the Coastal Commission. Now, sitting through the meeting a few weeks ago and watching the machinations about a trail through a person's private property who wants to build a home was a different, you know, type of animal than watching our wastewater project go forward. And so the scenarios are so different, and I would think by the time the project gets there, it has an aspect of coming down between two different kinds of paradigms about what planning involves. And so I always would hope that we would be looking at what these other senses of values are besides our own community values in terms of when we have to work with these larger organizations outside the immediate bounds of the city.
Well, I think, you know, the Coastal Commission, the policies they put in place for things like public access to beaches and things like that, I think I personally strongly support. I think there probably could be some more relationship building, maybe on outside of the only time we seem to interact with them is when we have controversial projects, and I think at that point you're
denied the high energy seismic testing off coast here. So I think with our relationship with the city, though, that it'd be very important for us to finish some unfinished business that we have in Morro Bay, and that is to get our local coastal plan accepted by the Coastal Commission. And that hasn't been done for a number of years, and I don't think that we're that far apart, but I know it's a difficult task. There's monies that have to be spent, you know, it's not an easy task, but I think it's important to get that done so that we're on the same page when they accept our local coastal plan, that we'll be better off with our relationship with the Coastal Commission.
And I will go last.
Thank you.
So the Coastal Commission, you know, I think everyone here agrees that it's necessary for the state. I can see that it has been, you know, a strained relationship. And, you know, I honestly, on an individual basis, I do think about sometimes how do we repair or make a tie with them. I don't really know. It seems like they're very, very busy. And, you know, the only time that we really interface with them is through some of these bigger, more contentious projects. And I don't know how much money and time you throw at that. But it's worth discussing, because so far, I don't know that we've been treated all that well. So I think we do need to put a new foot forward with them. And how to do that, I think I don't quite know right now. And that's my answer. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for all your answers. Are there any follow-up questions?
This is just a quick one. Do you foresee any conflicts with a four-year term for each of you? That might be hard to say now, so I won't hold you to that 3 years down the road. But at this point, would you foresee challenges attending all of the meetings as far as the Planning Commissioner goes?
No, none here.
No, none here as well.
No.
No.
Also no.
Barring health, no.
Great. Any other follow-up questions? None? Okay. Do you have a question? Okay. So at this point, Andrew, you can help us out with the voting. We can hand our slips up to you. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Good evening, Mayor and Council. If you could vote for two planning commissioners and then hand your slips to me, I will tabulate those. I will read out loud who voted for whom and who received votes. And depending on how the votes come out, we may need to take a couple of votes. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Luker, before you announce those, just a thanks to all the applicants tonight and coming out and answering all our questions and taking the time. So thank you very much.
And the results are, I feel special doing this. Paul Nagy received two votes. Jessica Napier received two votes. Michael Lucas received three votes. And Robert Teft received three votes. So your two commissioners are Robert Teft and Michael Lucas. And Mayor Irons voted for Michael Lucas and Robert Teft. Councilmember Christine Johnson voted for Michael Lucas and Robert Teft. Councilmember Nancy Johnson voted for Paul Nagy and Jessica Napier. Councilmember Noah Smuckler voted for Michael Lucas and Robert Teft. And Councilmember George League voted for Paul Nagy and Jessica Napier.
Well, congratulations, and thank you guys for your service and coming up here to apply tonight. Thank you. Well, thank you once again, everybody, for coming out tonight. And got an example of the procedure so far, so we'll do the same thing and ask for you for introductions. And we'll start with the gentleman at the head of the table here, and we'll circle around. If you can give us your name and introduction, please. Yes.
My name is Stuart Skiff, and I live in North Morrill on Hemlock. And we are new homeowners in Morrill Bay, although we've lived here for around 3 years. My unique qualifications for this is I served for many years in the city of Folsom on the Utilities Commission that formerly was named the Public Works Utilities Board. And we changed the name to Utilities Commission because we started building a big project, and there were some legal issues with it and so on. So I feel that I'm well qualified and understand what's going on with Public Works. Solicited much public input from a new water rate revision that we put in because everybody in the state now has to have water meters. Of course, I understand we've got the highest water rates here in Morrill Bay in the country. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's something that could be addressed. But we garnered much public opinion by me calling the Sacramento Bee and telling them we're going to double the water rates. and we got a lot of public input. And the, so I feel that the, I understand what goes on with this and the, can help the city hopefully control the rates for water, sewer, garbage, and maybe do something with streets. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Rutherford. I've served on the Public Works Commission for the past 4 years. It's been a great experience. I look forward to possibly being able to do that again.
Good evening. My name is Marlis McPherson, and I moved to Morro Bay about 9.5 years ago, and I've been retired for the past 3 years. And since I've retired, I've been involved in a number of community activities, and I serve on a number of local boards, volunteering my time at the Morro Bay Natural History Museum and the Bird Festival and a number of other events in the city. I'm trained as a political scientist, so I understand how government works. And I have worked in the public sector, the private sector, and the nonprofit sector. And across all of those sectors, the main thing that I've been doing is collecting information, analyzing it, and coming up with recommendations and having to balance issues across a number of different topic areas. So I think I understand what's needed, and I think I could be a valuable contribution to the Public Works Advisory Board. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Debbie Owen. Thank you for having me here tonight. I'm a native Californian. I've lived in the county since 1980 and in Morro Bay since 1998, built our house here. My career has been in finance, which has absolutely nothing to do with public works in a vague sort of way. But my unique qualifications are that I am a blank piece of paper. I have no preconceived ideas, no prior agendas. I am a consumer of public works every day, so I am open, I am a problem solver, I've been in management all my life, and I'm just here because I retired last year and I'm trying to do something for my community.
Good evening, my name is Jan Goldman, and I've been a resident in Morro Bay for 5.5 years, and in that time I've been on many nonprofits. A member of many nonprofit organizations. I'm currently on several boards. I belong to many organizations in town, and mostly I like to be involved. I'm very curious about how things work and what we can do to improve them or satisfy different needs that we have, and I would just basically like to be involved in what's happening in town.
Good evening. My name is Eliane Wilson, and I have been a resident of San Luis Obispo County for 12 years. I am originally from France, and I see Morro Bay as the smallest city I have ever lived in. It's also the only one without a traffic light, and I see the possibility of gaining the best.
No, you can't. You only get one. All right. Moving right along. What do you see as your role and responsibility on the PWAB?
And we'll start up front with Mr. Skiff. If you can go this way back around. Can you turn your mic on, please?
PWAB is Public Utilities. Okay. My responsibility would be to review the infrastructure, probably answer complaints about the water service, water delivery. It does include streets, doesn't it? But streets, we have, the sewer issue is very large at hand. I have dealt with that in the past, and it would be my responsibility to make sure that or ensure that the bids are accurate. There was a $2 million mistake in the plant we built in Folsom that we didn't find out about until 2 years down the road, and we had to change the bond issue. And those kinds of things need to be addressed. Of course, water needs to be addressed with new mains. I understand that we're changing quite a bit in the system here. So talking to citizens, I imagine input comes through the council. I don't know where it comes from, off the website. We need to address that. Would citizens come before our commission and talk about issues with water supply, sewer, garbage? Does that happen here? I don't know yet. But
You would get public input, yes.
Yes, okay. So that's something we would address, and as the previous applicants for the Planning Commission, you know, we need to address that, and we need to find out what the public pulse is for rates and so on. I know I've heard many complaints about rates and the highest water and those other comments, and perhaps something can be done with that. I don't know, but that's something I would plan to get into and find out if we can do something with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rutherford.
I found being on the commission has been eye-opening to see all
of. Can you speak into the mic a little bit closer,
sure.
Please? Thank you.
I've found being on the commission be very eye-opening on the different issues that are here in the community. We have discussed the streets. We've discussed the water. We've discussed sewer plant a great deal. It's been something that's been interesting to watch, and I've personally gone out to see what the different wastewater management plants are like, so I would have a better understanding of what we're really talking about. One of the issues that I've had has been the pumping of treated water into the ocean. That it's roughly 1.5 million gallons a day that's going in there. That could be, as they do in the other places, put back into the farmlands, parks, other areas. So I have found being on this is just a real eye-opener.
Thank you.
Well, I think that public works is the bread and butter issues that exist in a city. This is where the rubber meets the road and what the citizens notice the most. You know, if their streets are bumpy or if they don't have clean water or if their sewers don't work, they're going to be quite upset. So to me, these are the important issues in a city. And I think this is a really exciting time for this city because with the recent decision by the Coastal Commission, we're going to go back to square one on our wastewater treatment plant, and I would like to be a part of the decisions that get made moving forward.
Thank you. Ms. Owen in the back, please.
I would like to have a better understanding of what goes on in my community. I see things all the time. I walk the Embarcadero every day, and I've had my own issues with public works and streets and driving by and going, why doesn't this get fixed? Articles I read in the newspaper, and I never fully understand or get to see both sides or hear both sides of the issues. And that's my primary interest in being on this board, is to have a better understanding so that I can communicate that. So when I'm talking to friends and neighbors, and we're having these conversations like over the wall, like I have with my neighbor all the time, I can explain in a logical, easy way of what's going on and why it's happening. And we all experience public works every day. We all run into that pothole. We all have water problems. We all have things that happen to us on a regular basis. So it is quite common. And I think that I would be a better citizen for having worked on this community, on this board.
I think she stole my answer. No, the public works seems like it's the most deals with the most essential things that we do.
I have an opportunity to improve upon maybe recommendation made by the staff or recommendation made by consultant to the staff. That's my perspective.
Thank you. And we'll go down to Noah.
Yes, thank you. My question's two parts. And the first is if you could describe as a board member how you would seek public input or information about the items coming before you. And the second part is more simple as far as a board member, would you be inclined to volunteer for a subcommittee or group that is related to something that the Public Works Advisory Board is focused on.
And let's take it over at the end, Ms. McPherson, if you can start us off, and then we'll go over to Ms. Owen and then circle back around to mix it up. Thank you.
Well, in terms of getting citizen input, I would actually see my role as being a conduit between the citizens and the staff. And I would certainly try to make myself available as much as possible to respond to citizens. But I think there are ways of actually doing it in a more formal way of organizing events where the public can come in. And some of it is just providing information back to them, so that they are up to speed and understand the decisions that are being made. And I think that's a crucial role that this advisory board can make, is to make sure that the citizens know what's going on. And I would use whatever means, I mean, certainly public meetings and whatever, to do that. As to serving on a subcommittee, of course, I'd be open to that. I would be more than willing to do that. Thanks.
Second question first. I would be more than honored to serve on a subcommittee. As far as communication, that's just who I am. Communication, there just never is enough communication. I was particularly proud of the people on the Planning Commission here before you, because they were so right on about communication. You cannot have too much communication. Personally, I think the signage in this town has gotten better, but it could be so much better. And I feel that communication is underrated, and I would have, I don't know how many functions you are that the Public Works is at. We have so many functions going on here all the time with a little booth or something, handing out flyers or talking to people. What do you think about this? Have you noticed the new that? What about this? You know, so I am all for communication. And getting down to the grassroots, the talking face to face with people is the best way.
The second part, yes, I would be willing to work on any other subcommittees. And the first part, again, like everybody else has said, communication. We could do it with. I've attended workshops on different issues that are in the forefront in the city that people are concerned about. I think we could do that. I think maybe just talking to people at community events, little notices in the newspaper or in the Bay News, other ways to communicate and get the word out to people about what's going on, and to keep it simple and keep it to the facts so that people don't get all confused when they're reading and still don't know what they're talking about when they get to the end. And basically communication, communication, communication.
So the first part, you would like to see how we as PWAC member would gather input ahead of the PWAC meeting? I see a challenge in there because there is so little time between the agenda being posted on the website and the meeting taking place. So there might be a need for more outreach to the public as far as notifying them of the meeting the following week with a very brief summary of the topics to be covered, rather than a full agenda package. Sort of like a checklist or a fact sheet for a large controversial item. As far as your second question, there would be no problem. I would be more than happy to serve on the subcommittee.
Thank you. Mr. Skiff?
But email is definitely a good way to reach part of our citizens. And, of course, you've got email, we've got slow times, we've got the Tribune, we've got various vehicles that we can do that. It seems to me like we have to post 72 hours before a meeting. I think that's a law. But there's nothing wrong, and that was a great idea, there's nothing wrong with doing that the week before or saying for the next month or two or three, these are what we're going to be discussing, and we need your input, citizens. Some flyers, some other things, if you got a problem. There's got to be complaints that come in to the various public service departments. What are we doing with those complaints? Are they on a piece of paper? Or are they kept in a database that we can query and we can say, okay, we've had 50 complaints about what's going on with Napa Street or so on, and the holes in the pavement? That would be a first priority to take care of. So there's many ways to look at that, and that's what I would be advocating is get as much input as we can from as many different ways and boil that down to a course of action. Thank you.
Thank you.
I probably am in a unique situation since I've been on the commission for the last 4 years. We always have our agenda and plenty of time. We have excellent input from the staff. There's a director's report that we receive each month, and we go over that. There's been a number of people who have appeared before the commission and brought up issues that are things that we need to talk about. As far as being on a subcommittee, I sort of appointed myself to be on the subcommittee to study about the wastewater plant and have visited a number of the places so I could see what the up-to-date things are and what the state of the art is on that. I'm sorry we haven't provided more outreach to different people, but my impression has been that as far as being on the commission, I've been well informed about what's going on. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your answers. I'll turn it down to Ms. Johnson, Christine, for your question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It sounds like if we had free pizza, we'd have a lot of subcommittee members. Yeah. So put that together. Well, thanks for your question so far. So let's look into the future in Morro Bay and our crystal ball. We have two large infrastructure issues looming, the rebuild of our wastewater treatment plant and the ongoing repair and at some point reconstruction of our streets. So as a member of the Public Works Advisory Board, how can you help ensure that these projects make progress moving forward? And Mr. Mayor will tell you where we begin.
Okay, thanks. We'll start with Ms. Wilson.
I think the wastewater treatment plant, obviously the barrier at this point is going to be to secure the funding necessary to change course, considered how much money has already been invested in the project. So I would think whether the PWAT itself can help secure the money, I mean, that obviously that would be great. Basically, I see that as a barrier in the near term. For the streets and roads, there has been improvement made, at least in my neighborhood near Black Hill. And I just assume that the program is phased over time, and that's thanks to the local option sales tax measure that passed in the city. I also hope that both of these needs can be met without one taking precedence over the other.
Thank you. Jan?
The question is, how can we ensure that they will get done?
You need to get it done, Jan. No, I'm teasing. The question, I don't mind repeating it at all. The question is, as a member of the board, these projects will be coming to you, most likely, at least in the beginning stages. So as a board member, what are some strategies that you could employ to help things move along on the proper timeline? What are some things you could encourage proper timing of projects and so that we don't lose focus?
We need to work toward that under the state deadlines and within our budget and making it functional for something in the future, far into the future. I would just have to just be sure that we stay on it, and I just keep talking about it to keep people aware of it.
Well, let me just say that I live on Kings Avenue, and I have a permanent appointment with my mechanic to have my alignment done every few months because mine is like the last street in Morro Bay to be even talked about. So that's a primary concern in my book, but I'm a big believer in follow-up. In my career, I was a manager, and I always had a pending file, and every day I looked at the pending file, and what's pending? Oh, look, this is coming up. I haven't heard from these people in a week. I got to get on the phone. I got to call them. You have to stay focused, and you have to stay on them. You can't drop the ball. You can't even blink because you might miss something. So that's my approach, is you don't lose focus by staying focused, and you follow up on everything, and when a problem arises, you don't pend it, you don't put it off, you just deal with it right then and there.
Ms. McPherson?
Well, I confess that I'm not really up to speed on the street issue. I haven't been following that, although I have noticed that the streets are being paved. And I know that many citizens have complained about it. I think that the role of the Public Works Board in this regard would be more to make sure that things are done in a reasonable, fair way and that the most serious streets are being addressed and paved first, and working with Public Works in that regard to just make sure that the process is fair and that as money comes available, we are taking care of the most serious problems. As to the wastewater treatment plant, I think we have such a great opportunity now, and I would see me and the other board members in working with staff to really come up with some alternatives now that we're starting again. And obviously we have to find a site, we have to decide on what the plant is going to do, what its capabilities are, and I would like to be a part of that. I don't think we're going to lose focus on it, and we would certainly take our direction from the council.
I feel like I'm talking from behind a door almost, because I have been serving on this commission for the last 4 years, and I've seen lots of action taken by the city and by the people that work for the city. There's been a plan on reinforcing or straightening up the streets. There's a problem that in northern Morro Bay, the streets were originally set up under very poor construction, and now they have to go back and correct that and make it so that they will be the solid base. But there is a plan that we've seen on the commission, and they have been working ahead on that. As far as the wastewater treatment plant is concerned, I think the biggest issue at this point is finding a location, and I'm sure we have staff that's looking at that. As far as the funding for the streets, we have to take what was available. There have been some discussions about possibly having an override tax. That's not a very popular decision, but that would be one way of resolving this problem. As far as the wastewater plant is concerned, we've been sending a lot of water out into the ocean that could be recycled. And it's my understanding that the new plant will have a tertiary, which will be the third treatment, making the water even more pure than it is now. So I would see we just need to continue on the way that we are.
The thought of us turning into a Los Osos just scares me to death as a new homeowner here. And they're going through torn up streets, and of course it's a way to get your streets done, but and they're going to be assessing the citizens over there quite a bit. I understand $100 to $200 per lot to get their wastewater taken care of. And we have the vehicle here. We've already done a study. I understand we've paid almost $1 million in consulting fees to advise us what type of plant, how to build, to do many things. So we've done quite a bit of the groundwork. Now we're faced with where to put it, how much money is that going to cost? I assume, I would imagine we've already got a bond issue or something approved for building where it was. So we have to figure out what the difference is going to be and so on, and I believe that's just communication. The gentleman to my immediate right made a very good comment with the water that's discharged from the plant. We're in an area where we're really short of water. The streets, yes, I can see the streets as I live in North Morrill. They've been pieced in. One layer is half an inch deep. The other layer is 2 inches. The other layer doesn't exist. Or somebody just run over it with a truck and it blew out and so on. It's not beyond the realm of reason, as we'd only generate, I believe, $300,000 a month, a year for street maintenance. Is the number that I heard. That's not enough to fix this, the streets in this city. So perhaps it's getting some citizens involved in it, getting them over to our commission or committee and saying, okay, would you be willing to pay for your area and get some input? If not, what's your idea? How are we going to do this? And I think it has to do with citizen input, letting them know what we can do and giving them some options, and make the decisions and move on. Prioritize on the streets now. Of course, I'm in North Morrow, and I hear a lot of grumbling, especially when they drive on some of the streets over here that are just freshly paved. And we didn't get any of that. And, you know, perhaps you can just pave the center section where the tires run, and not the whole street. How about moving the white line over a little bit? I mean, there's some things that I believe that could be done with prioritizing. And again, where are most of the complaints coming from? You know, are they on King Street? Where are they? And let's take a look at that, and let's communicate with those citizens and let them know that, yes, we heard you. Yes, this is what our resources are. And, yes, you're on the list.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one last question, kind of switching gears a little bit. We've talked about our streets and the wastewater treatment plant, but considering we're such a small community, how do you personally view the value of our pedestrian access? In other words, do you view the availability and clear pathways for this community? And then if that, how would you prioritize that? And I'll start, I'll start with Ms. Goldman in the back, please.
Pedestrian, okay. Since I walk a lot, I am very, very interested in pedestrian access to places. And as much as I enjoy walking and would love to have lots of other places to walk, I think I would have to prioritize pedestrian access below road repair, below the wastewater plant. Not to say that it's not as important to me, but I don't think everybody else in town will feel that it's equally important. And I think the things that are most used by most people should be first, highest on the list.
Thank you. Ms. Owen, could you go next?
I do walk the Embarcadero every day. I would like to see that just be pedestrian access. Just cut off the Embarcadero over at the bottom of the hill and just make the whole thing pedestrian and have the parking all up. But then we don't have the parking spaces. So you kind of, where would you put them unless you're going to build a parking structure or something where that would not be applicable to Morrow Bay? We're not parking structure kind of people. But if we had the space, that's what I would like to see. But maybe some kind of modification of that, because it is a walking town, and I get asked all the time. People ask me, "How do I get? Where's the restroom? There aren't enough restrooms. Where's the nearest coffee? What's the coffee shop? Is there anything open?" And you have to tell them how to get around the streets and what to do. And it would be nice if it was just about more. I think it is important for a community to have that kind of access. It just generates more business. People are happier. They're not worried about their dogs. They're not worried about their kids. It's just, you know, it's a pleasant experience.
Ms. McPherson.
You know, I think we've made a lot of progress in creating more pedestrian walkways in Morro Bay just since I moved here with the walk along the harbor. And I know that it's possible that now that we're not going to build a wastewater treatment plant on that beach, that we can expand the pedestrian walkways not just in the current central city but outward as well. And I would certainly support that. I think also that we could get grants for that, and I know we've gotten grants before to do some of that. Because really it's, in terms of priorities, I think the wastewater treatment plant and streets, I'd have to agree, are a higher priority if you're talking about money. But I think there are ways to expand pedestrian walkways as well, and we should pursue them.
Thank you.
Add another 2 feet to it. Do we have the access there? Is that part of our right-of-way? How much is it to put 2 more feet on? And maybe we can't do asphalt. Maybe we can do rock. We can do something where we can walk on it, especially down by the Bird Avery. The pedestrian access. Lois Capps came out and dedicated across the Morro Creek out there. In my thinking, that should be a bridge from 41 right down through into the Embarcadero, with proper planning, Planning Commission. That's part of it. And when you do that, of course, you have a trail there. And the grant money, we managed to get grant money to develop 31 miles of trails in Folsom. And they're paved trails. And at the time, our Rotary Club up there put 31 benches out for people to sit on and various other things. So I don't know where that came from, but it is available. Yes, our government's broke, but, you know, the squeaking wheel gets the oil. So I believe that's something that that could be done is get some more grants. And here again, it's just taking a look. If we've got a street project, can we put a trail on it? Well, would a trail benefit us there, yes or no? And move on from there. And here again, take a look at that priority list and work on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson.
I look at Morro Bay as surrounded by natural resources where it is possible to walk, mainly the beach, and that's a very large expanse of walking territory. And the Black Hill has several trails around it and up to it. When it comes to the neighborhoods, there are very few, if known, sidewalks. Therefore, there are barriers to walking, especially if you do it after hours, where nobody can see you alongside the street. So I think pedestrian safety is an important issue, which also relates to bicycle safety. And the designation of walking paths where they exist is one step with proper signage. But the next step is to connect those among each other. So identify where, when you walk on the street, there might be a possibility to integrate a pedestrian-related improvement.
Thank you all for your answers. Are there any follow-up questions? You ready?
Yeah, actually, my question's to the board then for our voting, considering it sounds like we're in favor of working to expand the commission to 7.
I think I would refer to our city manager or city attorney, just thoughts. I think we would have to conduct the first 2 votes first and then maybe bring it back to conduct further votes. Your suggestion on that?
I would suggest tonight you just pick 2, and then at the night when you were to take under advisement whether to expand to 7, you could do the vote for the remaining members at that time instead of tonight. Tonight
okay.
is only to pick 2. You do not have bylaws that allow you to go to 7, but I would certainly ask the ones that do not make it if you will still be interested in that position if, in fact, we go to 7 and that item can be at your next agenda item. I will be bringing the agenda item forward to revise the bylaws for the T-bid because of a couple changes that need to be made, so it can be put on just at your next one. So that's the best way to do it because it's not agendized yet to go to 7, and if you take the actual vote tonight, it's really you're prematurely making that decision.
Any conflict with making the 2 required votes and then making our 2 selected, but just keeping that?
I'd rather you wait till the actual meeting
okay.
to do that.
It
will take us not that long at that meeting to make that vote.
Okay, we're on for 2 votes.
Can we confirm with all the applicants that they're willing to serve if they aren't seated tonight? If we revisit this and it's in support of expansion, then they'd be willing to accept that position at that point.
Maybe we could turn in our votes, and while Andrea's counting them, you could ask that question. Save a little time here.
Someone's hungry. All right.
Let's make our votes, and then we can ask the question.
I wouldn't be here.
And our deepest appreciation for his time and effort and care that he put into being on the Public Works Advisory Board and serving the city.
I would certainly second that. Thank you, Bill Olson, for all your hard work.
Yeah, very nicely done. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up, Noah and Nancy. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. For those of you tonight that aren't seated, are you still willing to be considered if we approve expansion of the committee?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right, the entire group.
And the results are going in order of votes. Richard Rutherford received 3 votes. Both Janeth Goldman and Marlis McPherson received 2 votes. Elion Wilson received 1 vote, Deborah Owen received 1 vote, and Stuart Skiff received 1 vote. And in the manner of voting, Councilmember Christine Johnson voted for Richard Rutherford and Marlis McPherson. Councilmember Lee voted for Richard Rutherford and Janeth Goldman. Mayor Irons voted for Elion Wilson and Marlis McPherson. Councilmember Nancy Johnson voted for Deborah Owen and Janeth Goldman. And Councilmember Noah Smuckler voted for Richard Rutherford and Stuart Skiff. So we have we have 2 positions, and we have clearly Richard Rutherford has 1, and we would need to revote, voting only for Janeth Goldman or Marlis McPherson.
We use those again?
Huh?
We're in the one
that draw a line and do it again.
We have lots of papers.
George?
We have lots of papers. Insert name.
Well,
I'll say circle. That's a good idea.
What's that?
Nancy?
Circle the X.
Circle whatever. Circle one name. All right.
We'll just circle the X. What are we going to do? How are we going to mark?
Circle the name.
And in the runoff, we had Marlis McPherson with 3 votes and Janeth Goldman with 2 votes. And they ran in this manner. Councilmember Christine Johnson voted for Marlis McPherson. Mayor Irons voted for Marlis McPherson. Councilmember Nancy Johnson voted for Janeth Goldman. Councilmember Noah Smuckler voted for Marlis McPherson, and Councilmember League voted for Janeth Goldman.
Okay, thank you all. Congratulations, and thank you all for coming out. And we look forward to looking for two more. We're now conducting interviews for the Citizen Oversight Committee. Measure Q interviews. Thank you all for coming.
It was a requirement that I have a really good understanding of the various financial reports that the Oversight Committee looks at during their once-a-year meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Thomas.
Hi, I'm Catherine Thomas. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Catherine Thomas, and I'm a forensic psychologist. And I lived in Southern California for 40 years, and then was in Europe and Central America for a couple of years, and I just returned to California after 18 years in Maine. I'm licensed in both California and Maine. When I was here, I was a professor at San Diego State University. My primary, one of my positions there that I thought made me somewhat relevant for this position was that I was the chair of the Intercollegiate Athletic Authority, which is a San Diego State is a NC2A school with a multi-million-dollar program, and we were the oversight committee for that particular budget and all NC2A rules and Title IX, et cetera. I've also had my own business when I was in Maine. I was, like I said, a forensic psychologist. I had Thomas Bay Counseling. I have worked for a hospital where I was the lead psychologist and in charge of budgets. And I've had a fair amount of experience in budget-type situations and how to spend money and how not to spend money.
Thank you. We have some great candidates. To start off with questions, Ms. Johnson, if you'd start off with us.
Certainly. I have just one question for you. Would you explain in some detail the work of the Measure Q Committee? Who do you want first?
Mr. Alexander, would you start, please?
The Measure Q Committee meets once a year. Prior to the committee's meeting, the city staff provides the committee with the funds balance sheet, the funds income statement, and a copy of the funds general ledger. Our goal is to, or our task is to go through those financial documents and look at every single transaction to be sure that, in our opinion, it met the voters' intent when they voted to approve the half a cent sales tax. For the last couple years, I will admit the staff has done a good job of abiding by the voters' initial intent. But in the first several years, there was some liberal interpretation of the funds and how they were to be used, and our job is to really be sure that the funds are not used to backfill the general plan. General fund, excuse me.
Thank you. Ms. Thomas?
I don't even know what the Major Q Committee is, so I can't give you an answer.
Okay, thank you for you being so frank. Thank you. Noah, would you take the next question?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to follow up on that. Because we have a current Measure Q member that has done an excellent job, who wasn't able to attend the interview session tonight because of commitments that she has. So we have the ability to make an excusable absence decision to appoint her tonight without her being here. It would be a challenging thing to do. It is not very frequently done. So I want to give you the chance then, with your recognition that you're not you don't know what the Measure Q Committee is there to do, how would you assure us that you can step into that role and perform in a capacity to this quality that our former member has, and how would you bring yourself up to speed, I guess, would be my question to you.
Can I interrupt your question just a quick minute? I think I started this off wrong by referring to it as the Measure Q Committee. It's actually what you have applied for is the Citizens Oversight Committee. I do apologize for that.
Correct.
Okay, sorry. I didn't catch that. That's a good point.
I think it is a good point because it's not in the bylaws, Measure Q, on page one at least.
Hang on. Let's clarify over here. Thanks. Go ahead. That was a good clarification. Answer.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess if you can expand on, I want to give you the chance to answer the previous question then. And what drew you to the committee? It sounds like you've got some great experience, but if you could talk a little bit about how it relates to Morro Bay.
Okay, I'll give you two answers, basically. One is I was drawn to the committee because it was, of the various committees that were offered, seemed like the most likely that I would have some qualifications for based on past experience. I have not been in Morro Bay for very long. Even though we chose it 3 years ago, I haven't been here that long. I'm a quick learner. I'm an easy study. I'm a good scanner.
Thank you. I think in light of that very frank conversation we had with Ms. Thomas, I have a question that's a little odd to ask as far as she's concerned, but I want to just thank you for coming out. It's great to see someone take initiative and come forward. I think there are a lot of things that you would be great to do in Morro Bay, so I look forward to it. It sounds like you have a lot of athletic experience, and there's probably going to be recs and parks forever, too, so another place you could consider. So I'll just have the question. I'll ask the question, and it is, how do you explain, in a nutshell, what we call Measure Q informally, but what is the process of increasing a sales tax some years ago? So I guess really it would just be Homer that would be this question sort of directed to. How would you, just in a nutshell, if someone's new in town, how do you explain what this tax is for?
It's a general sales tax, which means technically it can be used for any general government purpose. However, during the campaign in the fall of 2006, a number of people, city staff, city volunteers, went out into the committee and explained that the tax money would be used for basically four things. It would be used to improve the fire department. Keep in mind, at the time, our fire equipment were in tents, and our firefighters were living in a modular building. It was to improve public safety in general, to improve the streets, and to go ahead and work enough on the storm drains to prevent toxic runoff from running in the bay. The committee was formed as part of the initiative that was actually in the ballot language, and we have very specific guidelines that the people voted on. Because there was concern at the time that the money would just go into the general fund and disappear for administrative salaries and things of that nature. And the committee's job is to be sure that the money is spent the way the voters intended it to be spent and not for just any general city purpose. Does that answer your question?
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
George, do you have any questions?
Well, we've all looked like we zeroed in on here in Measure Q, and you guys have done a wonderful job being a great watchdog over this. Have you seen any errors in this, the use of this funds to this point? I'm sorry that we're really on, this has been a, you know, this is the main topic in this town right now, so I apologize.
No, in the last couple of years, we haven't actually recommended anything to be reversed. In the first or second meeting in February, you'll be presented with a report with our recommendations from the prior year. And this year, we are not suggesting that, as I said, that you reverse any transactions. We didn't ask you to reverse any transactions last year. But in previous years, we have. And so far, knock on wood, the City Council has, City Council pass, have honored our recommendations and directed staff, much in some cases to their chagrin, to reverse transactions back into the general fund. We don't always agree with the city staff interpretation of how the money is to be used.
That helicopter was just outrageous. I agree with you
completely. Well, I want to be sure the district transaction tax fund didn't pay for those two chairs over there.
Yes. Okay. All right, back to some other questions. Thank you, Mr. Alexander. Ms. Thomas, I'll give you a question here that I think that could be relevant. Considering you've served on a committee that, an oversight committee for, financial fund, as you were saying, during that time, can you explain some challenges and some achievements while you were on that board?
Yeah. Number one, we're dealing with a national committee, which is the NC2A. We're dealing with the local committee, which is the San Diego State University staff and faculty. We're dealing with the community of San Diego. So we've got three different masters, in a sense, that we have to pay attention to. We have a lot of challenges in terms of the oversight, because it's not just the budget. It's how that budget is used for athletes coming in. If it's being misappropriated, if monies are going to places that they shouldn't be going. We had embezzlement issues. We had lots of different things going on with regard to the money that we had to deal with. Ultimately, our job was to make sure that what it was supposed to be spent on is what it was spent. There's a lot of intricacies in it.
Very interesting. Thank you for that. Any other follow-up questions? Should we cast the vote? Yes.
If I may first interject. Your rules for policies and procedures require the applicants to be at the interview unless the council provides findings of excusable neglect, which can just be in a motion. So if you are going to consider either Barbara Spagnola, who's in Sacramento on a business trip, and David Smith, who was sick this evening, then you should make that motion if, in fact, there's someone that wants to consider them. Without a motion, then they wouldn't be considered.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes. So to be able to make a vote for an absentee, that was just confirmed. Okay. The other thing, I think, it was unexpected. I know... Mr. Smith just noticed us that he was sick and wasn't able to attend, so he wasn't part of that interview process. We did have some forewarning with Ms. Spagnola, and I did, exchange emails as far as, some questions. I don't know if anyone else has done that, but I just wanted to, make that information out. And so I got a reply that was very similar to my question asked this evening.
I also, that Ms. Spagnola did reach out to the entire council and let us know in advance that she would be on a work trip and couldn't be here. And I also did have back and forth with her, asked her questions, and got her response prior to today.
I also spoke with Ms. Spagnola at a recent meeting.
Anything else?
I did as well.
Okay, with that, ready to cast a vote? Okay.
Councilmember Smuckler, did you know that you only voted for one person?
Homer's the committee.
I can mark it.
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
there was one vote. That
Thank you. We have 5 votes received for Homer Alexander and 5 votes received for Barbara Spagnolia.
Thank you. Thank you for applying. Thank you, Ms. Thomas, for coming out. Look forward to seeing you again. With that, how about the Rec and Parks Commission? Good evening, you guys. Thanks for coming out. Thank you for their continued board members for reapplying. And same procedure as you've seen previously, and I'll start with the head of the table here. If you can give us an introduction and then continue around the table, please. Thank you.
I'm Tom Coxwell, almost 3 years resident of Morro Bay. Wow. Council, staff, this is quite a procedure. I would not have been able to figure out a way to do it, but you've done it. I started off in recreation about the same time that Morro Bay became incorporated. I have over...
You're a sounding board for the council, but there's an awful lot involved. And so I really had a chance to learn more about the inner workings, what's involved, what it takes, and... the important thing is that the commission worked together as a very cohesive unit, and it's been a real pleasure with this past 2 years, and I would like to continue for 2 more years.
Thank you. Mr. Swain?
Okay. I'm still a member of a resident of Morro Bay for 2 years, and like I said, I was a Parks and Recreation Commissioner for 8 years in Fountain Valley, and I also have been a youth coach for basketball, baseball, soccer. So I love the activity in parks. I play basketball all the time, and I like to see us get more people involved in our park system. We got a great park over there at Del Mar, the tennis courts and all that, and I like to see tournaments and all this be brought in there and bring some tourists into town for some great outside activities. Bring them in here and have some events in the parks. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Drew Sedaris. Been living in Morro Bay about 5 years, former parks commissioner. And I'm just looking for a way to give back to the community. You know, I enjoy it. I think we have a lot of great programs, a lot of diverse programs that are run through the park department. And I think we have a lot of beautiful parks. And I think that a lot of people you know, value the parks. I think when people come to a community, they look at the community. They look at the schools and they look at the outdoor spaces, and they see how pretty it is here, and that's why people choose to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll start out with questions with Mr. Lee. You have some questions to start out? Yeah, I am going to start with you.
I just want to know if Dr. Bob has been working on his jump shot like I... You've been getting it down?
I have no jump shot.
You don't have no jump shot left?
I got a
book. I asked you about that the last time.
I know.
Anyway, I just want to say... you guys out there in the recreational parks and recreation have been doing one wonderful job. I mean, it's just, it's great. And I sure hope to see someday that we get to get a swimming pool put into this town. So I know everybody's working for it. I'm real hard on that. Other than that, I don't really have any questions. I'm glad you guys all come up here, and I know you're all four of you do a pretty darn good job.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, Christine?
Thank you. Thanks again for applying. Let's see, since I get three questions that I prepared, so which one's the best? Can you give us two or three ways that parks, trails, bike paths, sports fields, beaches, and programs impact our economy in Morro Bay?
We'll start Mr. Coxwell.
Well, people come as a destination to enjoy themselves. I live close to Del Mar Park. It's used not only by the residents, but everybody else. The other things that go on, the runs, the rock to pier, and those are also draw people. The San Luis Bike Club has 1,500 riders that leave for Morro Bay High School. All of that has a huge impact. That weekend of the bike ride, there were no motel rooms anywhere. Our city offers a lot of opportunities for recreation, not only for us residents, but for the people that come. And we should encourage both of those avenues to, as a commission, to provide facilities and opportunities for that to continue.
Thank you. Mr. Romero?
I think with the addition of the courts at Del Mar, has brought a lot of interest, and it's right in our website. People go to our website, they click on Parks and Rec, and it tells them all of the courts that are available, the various tennis organizations, time they can play, and we've actually attracted more new members to our tennis group because they got the information through our website. So the website has really been a real payoff for us. And people in general like the new courts. They're great on your feet. I have feet problems, but it's a nice and very, very nice venue. And other than the other activities, other than the youth sports, I'm not involved in that, but involved with the tennis group.
If we can't make something happen at that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sidaris.
Hi. Well, I believe that the Parks and Recreation does bring a lot of money to the city coffers. There are a lot of baseball tournaments. There are a lot of businesses that are supported by the outdoor activities, you know, kayak rentals, boat tours, all that sort of thing. And you got to realize there's two different segments to it. There's the physical park itself and all the things that happen in these parks, from the runs and the bicycles and the kids playing, to the in-house stuff where we have senior programs and our, like, wonderful junior lifeguard program, things that sort of, you know, have been a part of the fabric of this community for years and years, the Delilah Festival, the bird watching festivals. And it all ties into the Parks and Recs because they handle the permits. What a lot of people don't realize, too, is that Parks and Recs has taken on more and more responsibilities as far as public buildings and street trees and so on and so forth. But I think overall, most citizens probably don't realize just what the facilities we have are here. And it would be good for more people to be involved But I do think the parks are a great asset to this community and do bring in quite a bit of revenue. I think people come here because of them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Johnson, Nancy, question?
Oh, sure. What's your vision of our Rec and Park Board, your position on the board? And this is a two-part question. And how do you feel about working with other groups and projects that kind of go beyond just our parks?
Mr. Romero, would you start out for us?
Well, I would be totally in favor of working with other groups or other organizations. We do have a yearly meeting. In fact, this year it's going to be up at Atascadero Lake, where all the Parks and Rec commissions that belong to the County of San Luis Obispo attend. They have an all-day workshop providing input about what they're doing with their programs, what kind of a response they're getting from the general public. And it's very, very informative. So I think that's a real strong possibility that people all want to work together within their various cities.
Thank you. Mr. Swain?
I also agree that I think it would be a great benefit to work with other organizations, you know, like Special Olympics, and I know we worked with those down in Fountain Valley and brought those into town, and that brings a lot of people in. And just by working with other organizations, you know, like we get the Rotary or whoever to help sponsor things, or if they have an event, we get behind them and make parks and recreation part of that event. Just keep people more aware of what the Parks and Rec is available to them and what we can do. I think that'd be a great idea. I'm 100% in favor of working with other people. And the first part of the question is, what?
How do you see? Excuse me. How do you see the vision of the Rec and Park Board and your position on that board?
Okay, I would imagine their vision is to always expand, improve the parks, make them more accessible to everybody. And I would be more excited to take part in that, be as a member of the board to help them achieve that goal, because I definitely feel that a community is not really a vibrant community unless they got some way to outlet their, you know, they work all day long or do something. They got to have a place to go let some outlet, which would be sports, you know, baseball, basketball, or just get out there and have a picnic. 4th of July picnic or something like that. We need that space to let people unravel and keep their sanity. So I'm a big fan of park space and making it work for the people. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sidaris.
Yeah, I think by our nature, we're a very social group, the parks and recreation people here. We do welcome people to bring whatever ideas and events here. But I think the main purpose of the committee is for oversight. You know, we look at the programs, we see which ones are working, how much of the community is benefiting by each program, you know, come up with suggestions of where we get funding or where we can streamline things to make the funding we have work. If you look at the minutes of the of our committee, you see that we do a lot of oversight. It's, you know, this is what we plan to do, this is how it came out, we came in under budget, we had some suggestions as far as how to make this work better, get more participants, or make it easier on the participants, you know, by changing venues or times or staffing. But I think overall it's a very well-run outfit, and I'm real proud to have been a part of it. So I'm just looking to see if I can continue my volunteering. But if it's time for some new blood, I'm good for that too. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Coxwell.
When the community pool becomes to fruition, there's going to be a lot of groups that are going to have to work together, not only the fundraising group that exists now, the school district, and the council. So there's going to have to be a lot of working together, and or it's not going to happen.
It's very good, and I think it should continue that way just because it's an outdoor community. People are really in tune to that. It's like a whole separate. There's never a fight in our department. It's like everybody's happy to see us because we're happy people and we do happy stuff, and that's the way it should be.
You're lucky.
Yeah, we are.
I want to live there.
Yeah. No, I would agree with Drew regarding his commentary. That's really unfortunate. There's not enough public comment at these meetings. I mean, we met 2 weeks ago, and I think there was two people in the audience, and they left about halfway through. So there's not really a lot of input from the city as far as personnel, other than when we're going over a specific project and we're reviewing a plan, whether it be the person who's spearheading that group or the one who's drawn up the plans is here to review that with the commission, and then based on the information we receive, it's passed on to the council for their decision. So I would like to see more participation. Maybe we need to put an ad in the Tribune. Maybe a week before the meeting, we should put a plug in the Bay News. I know a lot of us read that on a regular basis, and let people aware that this is open to the public.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, for Tom and Bob, I'm interested to know how you'd go about informing yourself on different issues that were coming before the board. Go ahead, Tom.
I watched the last commission meeting online and saw what they were dealing with. Got a little bit of an opportunity to see how it works. As far as other issues that come before the board, are you saying how would I, as a board member?
Yes.
You're going to have to get out and, you know, if it's a specific area of the park, go look at it. If it's a specific need for a lacrosse field somewhere, do some research. You know, if you're on the board, you're volunteering to fulfill an obligation to figure out, and you need to educate yourself so you can make intelligent comments and decisions.
Okay, I believe the question was how would I keep myself informed or update on new things coming out of.
Yeah, as you're on the commission, how would you gather information to be able to make a determination?
Well, I definitely agree with the previous gentleman. I think as you get your docket, what's going to be brought up, go out and check the position, see what it is. Say, for instance, if there's something happened at the Del Mar, go out there and visualize the whole thing and try to figure out, well, is this really, what's the viable way to solve the problem? What's the not only the cheapest, but it's the most beneficial to take care of the whole problem or any of the parks. And I know there's, like for instance, the baseball fields. You can't use them 24/7 because it wears out the soil. You have to every once in a while shut it down, rehab the soil. So I know just going out and evaluating the area that's involved is probably the best way I could take care of it, I think, and just make myself fully aware of it and maybe go on a computer nowadays with email and all this computer stuff. We can get all the information we ever want and just check out what other cities have done to alleviate the problems or to enhance the situation.
Thank you.
I think I just have one question for him. What's your assessment of the inventory of our parks currently and their condition? And I'll start with Mr. Coxwell.
I'm impressed. I visited five different parks in the last couple of days. I play tennis at Del Mar. I play tennis at the, I don't remember the name of it, but the Shasta.
Mighty Young.
I play tennis there. When I lived here in the 70s, I played softball at Kaiser.
Lila Kaiser.
Yeah. For a town the size that we are, our facilities, our park facilities are great. But that's not to say that we don't have a future to expand them.
Thank you. Mr. Romero?
In the past, the last past 2 years, and Drew can confirm this, we take the trolley and we tour all the parks. We actually get out and physically look at the fields, look at the bleachers, look at the stands, look at the foliage, and for the most part, they are really kept very, very well. Some areas that need to be improved are restrooms.
To check into that and see if it's a feasible that we can add that into the program and make our parks even better and more pleasing for everybody to visit. Thank you.
Well, I'd venture to guess our parks are probably in the top 10% of the country if you look at how well they're maintained. And you also have to take into account, and I know you know this because you deal with the infrastructure, it's a very difficult place to keep something well maintained because of the weather, you know, the sun, the ice, the everything we have out here. It's nuts. Parks and Rec seems to have a good relationship with y'all, and everybody gets the funding, and it just seems to work fine. You know, if things come along and get maintained as needed, of course, you know, you first get your safety, health and safety things first, and then your visual stuff. But everything seems to get done in a well-organized manner here, because I think everybody's pulling in the same direction on this. But I think we have some of the nicest parks in the state. And I think there's a lot, it goes to show there's a lot of community pride, too, because people take care of their stuff here, which is good. There's not a lot of vandalism or graffiti, which is great. Thank you.
Well, great. Thank you, guys. Any follow-up questions? Great. We're ready to cast our vote.
We're just double checking. We're voting for 3. Is that right, Ms. Licker?
And the votes are in. I have 5 votes for Drew Sedaris. I have 5 votes for Al Romero. I have 3 votes for Tom Coxwell and 2 votes for Robert Swain. And the votes went in this manner. Councilmember Nancy Johnson voted for Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Tom Coxwell. Councilmember Smuckler voted for Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Tom Coxwell. Mayor Irons voted for Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Robert Swain. Councilmember League voted for Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Robert Swain. And Councilmember Christine Johnson voted for Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Tom Coxwell.
And the conclusion is on that?
Our 3 new members are, I'm sorry, the Drew Sedaris, Al Romero, and Tom Coxwell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your coming out and your time and interview. Thank you. Is that right? I thought so, too.
I thought there was a tie between Bob and
Andrea, can you check that? Just one moment.
We thought there was a tie.
Can we take a 5-minute short break and we'll be right back? Yeah. Thanks. 5 or less. Thank you. AGP?
That was our best break yet.
Yeah, quick.
Okay. Thank you, and we're back. We are now into our business portion of this special meeting, and seeing as we have no one in the audience, there's no need for public comment for these two items. So first thing on the agenda for us is reconsideration of the dates for City Council Goal Setting Workshop, and I'll have some assistance from our city manager, and we'll start laying out the dates and getting our calendars together to see what would work.
That is a normal JPA date, and so the evening of March 14th will not work, and we are currently looking for, I believe, a second date, but I do want to reaffirm that first date in March. Went ahead and we're trying to juggle a little bit between the availability of three parties for the goal setting, certainly the city council, certainly the facilitator, and then certainly your department head team. And we went ahead and looked at available dates. We picked available dates that Mr. Marushka was available. And I will add to you, in addition to the dates that were on your original staff report, which were March 13th and 14th, he was also available March 11th, March 15th, and March 25th. And I will make one note that of those three dates, the March 15th date was generally not available with the majority of your department heads. So that's what kind of a reek, and there's a lot of dates and a lot of numbers, but that's kind of what we have. And I do have a calendar of March if you have a specific date. We do have a lot of competing city meetings and such to work around. I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. So there we go. We've got, and the 8th isn't one of those dates.
Mr. Marushka was not available
okay.
on the 8th.
So we have the 25th, 11th, and the 15th. Okay.
May I?
Yes, please.
I know originally I have on my calendar the 14th at 8:30 in the morning. Are there several people who can't do that? Or what was the problem with, wasn't that one of our original dates?
Go ahead. I mean, I can respond to that. I brought that up as well. There's part of that for me was just having still, I know it's a council workshop, but it was still the ability to have to continue the input as we, you know, get to the close of our workshop. And I think 8:30, and I think historically just if we wanted to include the public, it's limiting. So I was looking for an afternoon date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's important for us to have an afternoon date. I like that 5:30 to 8:30 slot because of its availability to 9 to 5. So one of the things I was wondering was, I'm personally looking at the 11th and the 13th as the two best dates. I think it would give us that ability to avoid the other meetings that week and still retain that 1 to 4:30 time slot and 5:30 to 8:30 time slot.
So are you saying that on the 13th we do 1 to 4:30 and then come back at 5 to something?
No, I'm saying that we move, I don't know if this makes a big difference or not, but we move that 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. meeting from the 14th to the 11th. That's Monday the 11th.
I could do that if we have to. I'd prefer a morning meeting, but I think people there. We have a lot of senior citizens who don't like to come out after dark, and at 4:30 it can still be getting late on the 13th. So I would really like to see, even if 8:30 is too early, I'd like to see at least one morning meeting for people who don't like to come out in the evening.
What time is it the 13th? Is afternoon?
That's 1 to 4:30.
Okay.
Which, you know, is almost dinner time for some people.
Yeah, and 1 to 4 is pretty good.
Particularly with daylight savings time happening right before that. That will still be nice and light.
I still will reiterate that I would like to see at least one morning. Even if 8:30 is too early, make it 9:30 or 10. But that would be my choice.
I would do that if it was a Saturday. But we couldn't find a Saturday, right?
Yeah.
So that's tough. For us to sneak that in, maybe with work schedule, also on the council work schedule, people who are serving here and working.
My personal feeling is that the 1 to 4:30 is still early enough for someone who's not able to be out after dark or into the evening. And our public transit system operates during that time. So I think that's fair.
I just think we're cutting our community short by not allowing them any morning meetings. I mean, there are people in the community who prefer morning. If, in fact, that argument's not going to hold, I would go for Monday the 11th, but it's not my choice.
George, do you have any preference on time?
No, I don't.
Whatever happens, you're in.
Well, I feel about the Gold City.
Okay. Did you have a comment?
I would just like to do a quick review of where we are.
Okay. We're still good on the 13th. The 13th, we only have, if we wanted to extend it out. Having said that, talking with Mr. Maruska, you know, there was the advantage of doing these is keeping that gap in between the two meetings smaller with preferable for him as far as just conducting and kind of keeping things moving in the momentum. So I understand that, you know, keeping these, the 13th and the 11th, you know, time-wise are probably the most ideal. But, and granted, you know, it is a circumstance that I hopefully we're not under on a regular basis, because I agree we're pretty compacted with our schedule here. You know,
well,
I think
just get it over with then and go with the 11th from 5:30 to 8:30.
How's the rest of everybody with that?
That's fine with me.
So we come up with the 11th from 5:30 to 8:30? Okay, we look good for there? Okay.
That's it, isn't it, for
I
goal
think
setting?
So. I don't think we need a motion for that.
It looks like we have a consensus. So our first half-day goal-setting session with the City Council will be March 11th from 5:30 to 8:30. That's a Monday. And the second half-day goal-setting session with the City Council will be Wednesday, March 13th from 1 to 4:30.
Thank you.
And prior to each of those sessions, we will have a short, abbreviated public comment period. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Next item. Consideration of dates for a special closed session meeting on real property negotiations related to harbor lease sites.
My understanding was that we were going to do that on the 25th in the morning and get it done. Can we still do that? Or are there other people, are there several people who have problems with that?
I'll put it out there for the rest of the comment, because that's where we're at. I think we had Dana was working on dates. I was open for most of the dates. And do you have a list of dates there?
No, I don't. I knew there was conflicts on all the dates, so I thought
the 25th was the clearest. That's what Dana said to me.
With the most council members that were available, but not everybody on that date.
So
and
the
I don't remember who
25th
was.
25th of March or 25th of
February.
February.
Sorry.
Yeah, that conflicts for me.
The entire day or the time?
The time.
Could you do it later in the day?
I could.
Once again, we're doing a late meeting. We've always done these big closed session meetings in the morning. I realize we're not going to get your breakfast burritos anymore, but I think it's just best if we can find a morning when we can do it and get it over with.
How are we for tomorrow morning?
You're kidding.
We haven't.
We're leaving town.
It requires a Brown Act.
Okay.
Personally, I just want to counterbalance your point, because for my personal schedule, I find that afternoon meetings are easier. So I just want to point that out, that for the convenience of you, that's a little less convenient for me, and I'm willing to actually cede that, but at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that.
I know we have different needs.
Yeah.
Maybe we could meet in the middle and have lunch.
That, I think, needs to be discussed by the rest of the council, too.
That's true. Oh, come on. Just you and I can figure it out.
But I do notice that that middle of the day tends to cut the day in half.
It does.
For me personally, and you're kind of, then your whole day is consumed by that.
Or your whole evening, yeah. So.
How many hours do you think we need for this?
I would, between 2 and 3. We're going to go over quite a few of the.
Well, we had it before our closed session.
I want to make sure we have enough time. You know, if we set it at 4, you're going right into the 6. If you do it at 3, you still might be backed up. And then that makes a very long day on a council meeting day. I'm fine at starting at 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon, you know, and we'll be done hopefully by 5:30 or 6. I just don't know how long. We've got quite a few lease sites to go over that have issues that are need. We need direction from council.
Do you have comments?
Truly, I am flexible. So whatever works for the majority of people, I'm fine.
Thank you. This for the month of February, the 25th in the morning, I just can't do right now. So it puts it in the afternoon.
Let's do the afternoon and get it over with. Because I think doing it the after you are going to serve on council, you need to make that job your first commitment, which is something I have always done and I will continue to do, even if it interferes with the rest of my life. Thank you.
With that, I think there are no future agenda items, as this was a special meeting. And with that, I can say we're adjourned. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.